Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time, we're heading down to Louisiana to tackle a case that really highlights the ripples of Obergefell v. Hodges.
Oh, yeah. Definitely still seeing those ripples today. And Bouquet v. Bouquet really shows how complex things can get, particularly in family law.
It sure does. I mean, we're talking about parental rights, child support, same-sex marriage.
A lot to unpack there, and a pretty strict deadline that throws a wrench into the whole thing.
Okay, so let's get right to it. What's the central question here? What are we trying to figure out in this deep dive?
Well, the big question is, can a same-sex spouse in Louisiana be held responsible for child support if they're not the biological parent? And to add another layer of complexity, what happens when a super specific deadline comes into play?
Sounds like a recipe for a legal showdown. So who are the key players in this case?
We've got Brittany and Nicole Bouquet, a same-sex couple whose marriage and attempts to sort out parentage ended up in court.
All right, let's rewind the clock a bit.
Yeah.
When did all this start?
So picture this, December 18, 2015. Brittany and Nicole tie the knot. But here's the kicker. Nicole is already pregnant at the time.
Interesting. So that throws a bit of a curveball into the whole parentage question, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because under Louisiana law, there's this thing called the presumption of paternity or maternity for children born during a marriage. It's found in Civil Code Article 185.
So basically, the law assumes both spouses are the legal parents of any child born during their marriage, regardless of biology.
Exactly. And that creates a real hurdle for Brittany, because if she wants to challenge that assumption, she has to actively prove she's not the parent.
Okay, so she's got an uphill battle from the get-go. So then what happens?
Well, fast forward a bit to February 5, 2016, and SRB, their child, is born.
All right, and I'm assuming the marriage doesn't last forever.
You got it. A little over a year later, March 14, 2017, Brittany files for divorce.
Makes sense. But didn't you mention something about a disavowal petition, too?
Oh, I did. And that's where things get interesting. So initially, in her divorce filing, Brittany sought joint custody of SRB.
Joint custody. But if she's not the biological parent and wants to disavow parentage, wouldn't that seem kind of contradictory?
Well, it definitely raises some eyebrows. And just a month later, on April 28, 2017, she files that petition to disavow SRB.
Okay, hold on. First, she wants joint custody, and then she wants to completely disavow the child. What's going on there?
That back and forth is a big part of what makes this case so fascinating. It really begs the question, what changed in that short month? And how would this impact her case later on?
And this is where that strict deadline you mentioned earlier comes into play, right?
Exactly. Louisiana law, specifically Civil Code Article 189, lays out this one-year prescriptive period for filing disavowal actions, and it starts from the day the child is born.
So in this case, Brittany had until February 5, 2017, to file that petition, but she filed it in April. That's way past the deadline.
You got it. She missed it by more than 2 months. And that missed deadline, well, it ends up being a huge e-deal, like really huge.
I can imagine. So how did the courts react to this missed deadline? Did they cut Brittany any slack?
Not really, no. Both the trial court and the appellate court ruled against Brittany. They were all about strictly implying that one-year window.
No wiggle room whatsoever. That seems pretty harsh, especially considering the complexities of same-sex marriage and parentage.
I know it seems that way, but there's actually a really fascinating legal strategy at play here.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Well, instead of diving headfirst into potentially messy constitutional arguments, the courts decided to stick to interpreting existing state law, but through the lens of Obergefell and another case, Pavon v. Smith.
I'm guessing those cases are pretty important here.
You bet. Remember, Obergefell guarantees the right to same-sex marriage, and Pavon v. Smith really solidifies this idea that same-sex couples need to have equal access to the benefits of marriage, including parental rights and obligations.
So the courts are basically saying that to be consistent with those landmark rulings, Louisiana law has to be applied equally to same-sex couples, even when it comes to something as specific as this one-year deadline for disavowal actions.
Exactly. They're basically saying, hey, any other interpretation would create this separate, unequal system for same-sex couples, which would directly contradict Obergefell and Pavon.
So that's how they sidestep the whole constitutional debate.
Pretty clever, huh? But yeah. I gotta ask, did Brittany have any arguments to justify missing that deadline?
That's a great question, and that's where we'll pick things up in part two of our deep dive into Bouquet v. Bouquet. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to our deep dive into Bouquet v. Bouquet. We left off with Brittany missing that crucial deadline for filing her disavowal petition, and the courts kind of sidestepping the whole constitutional debate by sticking to a stricter interpretation of state law.
Right. Really interesting strategy there, focusing on how to apply Louisiana law in a way that aligns with the principles of Obergefell and Pavon.
So equal treatment under the law, even when it comes to deadlines, makes you think about how every little detail matters in a legal case.
Absolutely. And the court really emphasized those key dates to drive their point home. Remember, the one-year clock starts ticking the day SRB is born, February 5, 2016.
And Brittany filed her petition on April 28, 2017, over 2 months past that deadline.
Yep. And that becomes a major problem for her because now the burden of proof shifts. She needs to convince the court that there's a valid reason for missing that deadline.
So it's not enough to just say, oops, I missed it. She needs to come up with a solid explanation.
Exactly. And the court even pointed this out in their decision. They said, the one-year liberative prescription began to run on February 5, 2016. Brittany's petition was prescribed on its face.
So they're basically saying her petition was invalid from the get-go because it was filed too late.
Yeah, no sugarcoating there. So what kind of evidence could Brittany have used to justify missing that deadline?
Well, she could have presented evidence of, like, extenuating circumstances, you know?
Like some unforeseen event or obstacle that prevented her from filing on time.
Right, or maybe she could have argued that she wasn't fully aware of the deadline or its implications.
Did she make any of those arguments? That's the thing. The court records don't show any evidence of Brittany offering any kind of justification for the delay. No compelling reasons, no extenuating circumstances.
Wow, so her failure to provide any explanation really sealed her fate.
You could say that. It really highlights how crucial it is to understand and adhere to deadlines in legal matters, especially when it comes to something as important as parentage and child support.
Definitely a lesson to keep in mind. So we see how the missed deadline played a huge role in the court's decision. But this case also raises some broader questions about the intersection of same-sex marriage, parentage, and legal strategy. It's not just about Brittany and Nicole anymore.
It really isn't. It makes you think, what if Brittany had filed within that one-year window? Would she have had a stronger case? What kind of evidence would she have needed to overcome that presumption of parentage?
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms. What kind of evidence could she have presented?
Well, it gets complicated because we're talking about challenging the very concept of parentage. We're used to thinking about parentage in terms of biology, but Bokeh v. Bokeh shows how those old models don't always fit when you're dealing with same-sex marriage.
Right. It's like the law is playing catch-up with societal changes. So many new questions popping up that we haven't really dealt with before.
Exactly. And as more same-sex couples start families, we're going to see even more legal challenges that test the boundaries of existing laws.
It's fascinating and a bit daunting at the same time.
Oh.
So much uncharted territory in family law now.
It is. Bokeh v. Bokeh doesn't give us all the answers, but it definitely highlights some important considerations. It shows the importance of careful legal strategy, the need for clear evidence, and just how much family law is evolving in the wake of Obergefell.
Okay, so this case is like a stepping stone in a much larger journey. And speaking of journeys, it's time for us to move on to the final part of our deep dive, where we'll explore the broader implications of Bokeh v. Bokeh and what it all means for the future of family law. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into Bokeh v. Bokeh. We've gone through the facts, the arguments, the court's decision, and now it's time to zoom out a bit and think about the bigger picture.
You know, this case, it really goes beyond just this one couple in Louisiana. It highlights how family law is constantly evolving, particularly in light of Obergefell.
It's like Obergefell provided this framework for marriage equality, but now we're filling in all those little details. Sometimes those details get pretty messy.
Absolutely. And Bokeh v. Bokeh really makes us confront this fundamental question. How do we define parentage in a world where biology isn't always the deciding factor?
Right. Like those traditional notions of family, the ones based on biological ties, are bumping up against the legal recognition of all these diverse family structures, including those formed by same-sex couples.
It's a real clash of ideas. And as more same-sex couples have children, we're bound to see more legal challenges that really push the limits of those existing laws.
So Bokeh v. Bokeh, even though it's this very specific case from Louisiana, has implications for family law across the country. It shows how courts need to adapt their thinking about parentage, parental rights, and what's best for kids in the context of same-sex families.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some key takeaways for our listeners out there? What should lawyers and law students keep in mind as they navigate this ever-changing landscape of family law?
That's the million-dollar question.
Well, first off, this case really emphasizes the importance of legal strategy. Remember Brittany's initial decision to seek joint custody. Even though it made sense at the time, it might have actually weakened her later argument for disavowal, created this sense of contradiction that the court picked up on.
So it's not just about the arguments themselves, but also the order and timing of those arguments. It's like a carefully choreographed dance.
Exactly. And secondly, this case highlights how crucial evidence is. Brittany didn't provide any justification for missing that deadline, and that was a fatal flaw in her case. You need solid evidence, especially in cases as sensitive as this.
It's like the court saying, show me the receipts, convince me.
Right. And lastly, this case reminds us that the law isn't set in stone. It's constantly changing and adapting to reflect what's happening in society. Bouquet v. Bouquet is just one small piece of a much larger puzzle as courts try to figure out the implications of Obergefell and how the definition of family is evolving.
So we're basically in uncharted territory when it comes to same-sex marriage and parentage.
Hmm.
Obergefell was a huge win, but the fight for true equality, it's not over yet.
It's definitely an ongoing journey. As legal professionals, we need to stay informed about these evolving issues, advocate for our clients with sensitivity, and push for legal interpretations that reflect the reality of modern families.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up this deep dive into Bouquet v. Bouquet. This case might not have all the answers, but it definitely sparks some important conversations and offers some valuable lessons for anyone working in family law. Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure diving into this case with you.